So here's the question. In the print and packaging supply chain, how do we deliver new ideas and innovative practices to continually improve your profit, your brand, and your quality? Welcome to the Gamut Podcast, and I am your host, Jeff Collins, Director of Print Technologies for ID Alliance. We are a nonprofit global think tank serving the graphic communications industry with 12 offices strategically located around the world to better support our membership. You can support the Gamut Podcast and content like this by becoming a member at ID Alliance by going to www.idalliance.org. Today's episode is sponsored by Heidelberg. Heidelberg has been a reliable and highly innovative partner to the global print industry for 170 years. Heidelberg offers end-to-end solutions for commercial, packaging, and label printers, including prepress, printing, finishing, packaging, service, consumables, and software. On today's Gamut Podcast, we are speaking with Dave Hunter again, and he is the co-founder and principal at ChromaChecker. Dave was one of Apple Computer's first three ColorSync profilers. He is one of the early G7 experts, and he is also an authorized G7 expert trainer for ID Alliance, one of only a few. Dave has co-authored several TAGA papers related to color matching and common color appearance, researching how buyers judge color. He is currently one of five North America members of the International CIE Committee, or TC8-16, that studies how humans perceive common color appearance. Dave pioneered a process that quantifies a person's expectation of color match acceptance, which he calls the E factor, and carries it through the complete manufacturing workflow, ensuring success for manufacturers and their customers. Dave, good morning. How are things going with you?
It's going great. Keeping busy.
Great to hear you're busy, Dave, and glad to have you back on. It's been over a year since we last were on the podcast, and we discussed a topic then about Delta E. We talked about Delta E, and you debunked many myths around Delta E, and you really gave our listeners the right way to use that particular metric to judge color match and color conformance. And as a matter of fact, it was one of our most popular episodes and still is in the top five. And today we're here to talk about a few things related to your solution, ChromaChecker. And we're also going to talk about the 95 percentile and what you call the E factor. But I'll let you describe that. But to start, I guess I for our listeners that aren't familiar with ChromaChecker, it's a cloud-based color. Actually, it's more than a color management solution, but it's a cloud-based solution. And Dave, how would you describe ChromaChecker to our listeners?
Color conformance platform, because it defines what's sellable. And from a print perspective, profitability is all about reducing waste and moving to a lean manufacturing environment. And in order to know what's waste, you need to know what's sellable and what is not. And our system, that's what it does. It tells you if the print is sellable or not. And it's simplistic, so any operator can figure it out in real time, so that if the print device is manufacturing non-sellable color, either the operator shuts it down or they fix it right away to get it back on track so it is printing sellable color. And this is quite different from process control. Process control are the steps that you go through to get a device under control. So but what is under control? Under control is sellable. So what we've done is we have done a lot of industry research quantifying what print buyers' expectations are. And we do this based on the CRF at the 95th percentile Delta E.
And Dave, I know you'll get into a little bit more detail about what the 95 percentile is. We use the 95 percentile and G7 master qualification for pass fail for color space, in addition to grayscale and hitting G7 gray balance or grayscale aims and targeted your solids and Nova prints. In addition to that, in color space, we ask that the submission pass the 95 percentile or certain delta. And This is the metric that you've found through some of the study that you've done that correlate well to whether or not a buyer or a person rejects color. And so why is that 95 percentile or what you call the expectation factor, E factor, so critical?
Here's why it's so critical is that today we use delta E to define color difference when we're dealing with two colors. Mm-hmm. So Coke red and how my printer prints Coke red, we can define a delta E there in terms of what the difference is. And it's a numeric number that tells you the lower the number, the closer it is, the higher the number, the bigger it is. And brand companies have chosen to use a delta E or a combination of delta E plus some additional metrics to define if that color is sellable to Coke.
Right.
And that works great for the most part for spot colors. Mm-hmm. But we don't have anything like that for process until we use this metric called the cumulative relative frequency at the 95th percentile delta E. And we shortened it to be called E factor, with the E meaning your expectation factor for a color match. And it's based on a type of delta E, so the E has a dual meaning, if you will. And an E factor expands delta E in that it's like delta E for process colors, in that when we're dealing with process colors, so we're dealing with images and pages of color, we're dealing with thousands of colors. And what the E factor says is that 95% of those colors on the page are within X delta E of the reference.
Right.
So it's quantifying that the vast majority of colors on that page are within a delta E of your reference or of your proof or whatever you're trying to compare the sample to. And the beauty of this is it marries perfectly with delta E. So if your delta E for spot is 2, your E factor for process can be 2 as well. And the relative difference is the same. So you're not having to learn a new metric. It's an extension of delta E.
Yeah,
and I like to call it delta E for process colors.
Right, it's a lot easier to say than 95 percentile CRF.
Exactly.
it's a whole number. Lower the better.
And what we've done is now that we have a metric that defines, if you will, how the page looks as a whole compared to how it would look if it was imaged under Grackle perfect conditions or if it was imaged on my proof, I can now quantify what your expectations are, because every individual has different expectations of how close two colors have to be or two pages have to be in order to be sellable.
And you did a paper on this with a few other individuals, and this was a study, a TAGA paper. Can you talk to me about that? Because it really backs up what you're describing as the right expectation or being able to really gauge how humans will accept or reject color and print.
So we did a TAGA paper where we've interviewed now quite over 200 print buyers, and we asked them what was acceptable to them. And we gave them 80 paired comparisons at different E factors. And we asked them whether or not it was an excellent match, a good match, a fair match, a poor match, or an unacceptable match. Mm-hmm. So we took a cross section of these print buyers from the industry and we said, what do you think? And we found that, of course, people's answers varied. And we used a number of different images so that it wasn't biased on any type of color. And we found that if we're under a 3, over 95% of the print buyers would accept it. If we're over an 8.5, over 95% of the print buyers would not accept it.
Right. So you bracketed that range of acceptability, and you said again, around 3 to 8, correct?
Yeah. If you're under 3, you're pretty much always safe. Right. If you're over 8, you're pretty much always doing it over again.
Okay.
And printers, with profitability being so critical, I mean, over 75% of the printers make less than 2% margin on sales, which is incredible that 75% of the print marketplace is working under such a tight margin situation, that eliminating waste becomes absolutely paramount to success.
Yeah.
And what we've done is we have a tool that shows every operator, every manager, every president, how every printing manufacturing device is performing at any time in the day. So you know, per operator, per printer, if the device is printing sellable color or not. And the operator, most importantly, knows this. And the operator can either make adjustments via process control adjustments to bring the device back into a sellable state using our software, mm-hmm. or supplemental software. Or they know that, hey, I'm printing sellable color. And it's about migrating from a graphic arts mentality where everything is visual and every operator has their own subjective judgment in terms of what's an okay sheet or what's acceptable, to a print manufacturing environment where we work off key performance indicators, i.e. this E factor,
KPIs,
and we can give weekly report cards. Our software builds weekly report cards for the operator showing how well they did last week versus the week before versus the week before, which is all about continuous improvement. This immediate feedback to the operator that, hey, you're running this device really well and you're making sellable color 95% of the time, or you're not. So we do a couple key things here. Number one is we've bracketed it for the general population, right? But we also can narrow in on an individual and or a company. And everyone has experienced a situation where you deal with a company and they have maybe 4 print buyers. And depending upon which print buyer you're dealing with, one could have an E factor of 3, one could be 4, one could be 6.
So those are really different target conditions. I mean,
very different.
Within a range, right? I mean, there's a range. Within a range. Yeah.
It's this tribal, I call it tribal knowledge, that you don't know what a customer's expectations are until you first deliver some prints. And that's a problem in our industry, is that every manufacturing industry has defined tolerances for what you're doing. So if I'm building a bolt for an airplane, there's tolerances for the tensile strength and the amount of width latitude I can have for the given size
bolt. Very straightforward. And
which are totally different than the tolerances for a lawnmower bolt, right? And our industry hasn't taken this to the level of saying, okay, we have a tolerance of 3 for this type of work. We have a tolerance of 6 for this type of work.
Right.
We've started to do work with that based on TR-016, if you remember the work that Bob Chung has done.
Yeah.
But it really hasn't moved into a wide encompassing standard in the industry. And so our industry has not defined what acceptability or sellable ranges are. And mm-hmm. So not only can we define what a person's expectations are, but we can then apply that to the print process. Because as long as a person's expectations are greater than what the print process is performing to, we have success and we have sellable color. If the person's expectations are less than the printing device's capabilities, mm-hmm. then we have a problem. And that's where we have either a redo or a discount on what we printed for the customer. This is where printers lose money.
many of our podcast guests from the brand side have mentioned this, how important it is as far as the printer being transparent and honest about their capability. And the truth is that many printers don't truly understand what their equipment's process capability is to begin with. So how can you be transparent and honest when you don't know what your performance of your devices are?
You nailed that right on the head. Very few printers know what their actual capabilities are. They're guessing. Right. With eFactor, though, you know right away. I just did a huge install with a company with multiple regional print facilities across the country here. And when we went in, we were able to document where all their printers were when we got there. And frankly, they have in these different regional print facilities, they probably have 60 different printers. And the average eFactor was 10. Okay.
It was 10.
They had some that were four.
Exactly.
They had some that were 16.
Yeah.
They had these printers that were way off the rails. And in the first stage of our implementation, our goal was to visit each of these regional centers and get all their manufacturing devices, all their printers down to within a 5 eFactor to Grackle. And getting them G7 compliant so that they have a shared visual appearance across their substrates.
So you're talking about the 95 percentile. Again, I want to make sure, because it's new terminology, that the metric we're talking about is it's a 95 percentile CRF. And if anyone is familiar with G7 master qualification, you've either been through the process or you're a G7 expert, you understand that G7 color space is one of the levels of compliance to become a G7 master facility. And that level of compliance dictates that you need to have a certain value for the 95 percentile. That's based off of a chart read of 1,617 individual patches, right, Dave?
So, exactly.
So we're again focusing on that, you know, the whole image, not just a solid, you know, whether cyan, magenta, yellow, or black, or red, green, and blue is in compliance, or your grayscale is targeting the G7 aims correctly for tonality and gray balance. We're talking about more than that, and that percentage is a perfect indicator as far as print buyers will accept as far as being, you know, good or not good, and within that range that you just described. So to carry on with, you know, the eFactor, when we're talking about an eFactor, getting that down to 5, that's, you know, accuracy towards, you know, Grackle, the Grackle 2013, for instance. So 5 is kind of in the mid range. So if you're a buyer that expects 3 or below, then this facility you're describing is probably going to have problems.
Well, exactly. And the key part here is that we've got to walk, we got to crawl before we walk, before we run. So we're stage one was, if you will, getting all these printers, and think of them as the best analogy is a dartboard. What's the goal? The goal is throw the dart and hit the bullseye. So what's the bullseye in print? I said, your organization has hundreds of printers across the country. And think of each printer as a dart. And right now, those darts are all over the wall. Never mind on the target, never mind close to the bullseye. So what we're doing in stage one is we're trying to get all the darts within a 5 to the bullseye. So the ones that are 16, we're bringing into a 5, yeah. The ones that are so forth. And they love this analogy because each printer being a dart, and now we know, is that dart 2 rings away from Grackle, or is it 5 rings away from Grackle, or is it 8 rings away from Grackle? That becomes very clear. If it's 8 rings away from Grackle, stop production, fix your device, whatever it's going to take. First step is recalibrating the device. Second step is looking at why it's off and maybe changing the corona wire or what have you to try to get that device back into line so that you can continue making sellable color. And one of the beauties of Chroma Checker, which has introduced this color conformance idea to the industry, is that we make these reports available to everyone. So it's not just the operator. Every manager responsible for every printer gets a weekly report showing them how the printers under their authority have performed last week or last month, whatever time frame you want. The managers, the presidents, can have a 70-inch screen set up in their office or in a public area showing green, red, or yellow. And anyone walking by at any time can see how every print device is performing within that time period.
So having that immediate visual feedback as far as performance, being able to see whether or not you're in the bullseye or you're out of the bullseye, is invaluable to changing behavior as far as being a quality-minded production facility. A lot of the time we run into the challenge of cultural change as far as behaviors, how people are sometimes complacent, but having that visual information at your fingertips, whether it's on a monitor or you're printing out something and pasting it on a board in a production meeting, it's extremely key to the overall cultural change to modify behavior in production.
By providing feedback, immediate and continuous feedback is the way you change behavior. It's the only way you change behavior. If you can't tell the operator what they're doing wrong and what they're doing right on every job that they print or every important job that they print, they're just going to do it any old way.
It's very much common sense. You can't solve a problem if you don't know you have one.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's the key concept of our product, is that we make it very intelligent for the operator to understand when the device is making sellable color and when it's not. And our technology has evolved to the point where we know the type of printer you're printing on. So for instance, if you're printing a given job on a given substrate and the E factor comes out to, let's say, 8, which tells us it's pretty much unsellable for anyone who's looking, but the substrate is off by 5, we warn the operator right away, check the substrate, because papers at 5th color and 4 color printing, they might have just printed it on the wrong substrate. There might not be anything wrong with the device, but they had the wrong substrate loaded in the printer.
Right.
So we call these things out to them, and that's a simplistic version, but we have much more elegant versions as well, that we've done enough work with digital devices and large format devices that if we see a situation where, let's say in a large format device, that the solids and tints for your cyan, yellow, and black are all correct, but the magenta is light throughout the tone scale to the solid, we throw up a message saying, operator, look at your magenta ink head. It appears to be clogged. Because we know that when we see this type of idiosyncrasy on a large format device, it's usually a clogged nozzle. We tell the operator.
Well, so if we look at, just big data and the ability to collect big data in the cloud and to be able to relate performance data back to events like maintenance routines, operators, or even temperature and humidity, we're then in a really invaluable position to be predictive. And that's one thing that is very difficult in print. When we don't understand performance capability and we're not able to look at trends, is that we're not able to be predictive.
Predictive modeling of what's happening.
Predictive modeling,
We track temperature and humidity with sensors, third-party sensors, as well as some sensors that we've made, because we felt the sensors for temperature and humidity were too expensive. So we actually manufactured our own set, because we feel it's so critical to monitor the temperature and humidity in the environment that the print process is in, that when the temperature and humidity starts exceeding one way or the other, the parameters for what the printing device is supposed to run at, we flag the operator right away saying, hey, there's a problem here. And an email can go to the plant manager who's in charge of the heating and venting and air conditioning, saying, hey, the room where your indigos are at just exceeded humidity. Check it out. So our system, when we say a color conformance platform, our system has alerts for everybody within the plant who's responsible for color, which goes down to the person in charge of the heating, venting, ventilation, and air conditioning. We include them in our alert system, and it helps everyone understand that their whole goal for that print manufacturing plant is to make sellable color. And for that, the instruments have to be right. The temperature and humidity has to be right. The lighting has to be right. The plate setter has to be right. The press has to be right. It's not just one person. Right. And for many years in color, our color tools have been built into individual products to do individual things, whether it's checking spot color, whether it's checking process color, whether it's making curves, whether it's checking instruments. There's multiple programs that do each one of these things on an individual basis. Yeah,
it's a very manual. They don't talk to one another. Right. You're forced to be manual because of that reason. We've come a long way as far as, communicating between manufacturers with different exchange formats. But a lot of the time they have the capability, but it's not being used. It's just sometimes too difficult. There's always little glitches here and there to get them all to talk to one another effectively. And hopefully there's, people that are embracing, open API and things like that.
I mean, just a case in point, we completely automated how Best Buy printers can assess and prove to Best Buy that they're reproducing their color to Best Buy specs. And no offense to Best Buy, but Best Buy's form that they give to their printers, which has their 18 Best Buy colors on it, and it has a P2P, and the printer is supposed to print this, measure the colors manually one at a time, write down the LAB colors, write down the Delta E's, and submit it back to Best Buy for approval. It takes a typical printer hours and hours of work to go through the iteration to follow this.
It sounds like GMI process.
Well, it sounds like a lot of processes.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's a very manual process. But, Best Buy needs to know that printers are doing this correctly. What we've done is we've automated a solution where we've updated the Best Buy form. So it's it's same size form. It's got all the Best Buy branded colors defined as name spot colors on it. You print it on your given output device, and I'll share with you how we work with an IO, an X-Rite I1 IO.
Okay, yeah.
So you essentially print it out, and then you measure this 90 patch target, which is two rows, and the I1 IO will read it in 10 seconds, and it will immediately tell you if what your Delta E's are for all the Best Buy brand colors. It'll tell you whether or not your press is G7 compliant. And if, let's say, one of the spot colors is off, Chroma Checker can iterate the CMYK build for that spot color that you can load right into, let's say, your HP Indigo RIP, have it reprint the Best Buy build on the fly, remeasure it on the IO, and the operator doesn't even have to hit the three corners of the target, that as long as the Best Buy page is put on the same place on the IO table, they just say measure, and the instrument comes out and measures the target in an automated way. So in this way, you can get your Best Buy compliance prints down to minutes instead of hours.
Right.
And the operator doesn't need any expertise in terms of, this Best Buy blue, it's got a little too much yellow, so I need to change my CMYK build. Right. All that goes away.
The decision-making process of if something's out is being automated with the solution.
It's being automated. And instead of handheld measuring each patch one at a time and then manually writing down the number, you've got an automated measurement device that's doing it with a label showing you where every color's at. So it takes this very, shall we say, hard process for a printer to prove to Best Buy that they're printing Best Buy colors. It streamlines it and saves literally hours and hours of effort to do this. And it tells you right away if your printer doesn't have the gamut to make, let's say, Best Buy Blue, it tells you that. So the first time you print and you measure, Chroma Checker will say, yeah, your Best Buy Blue is out of gamut. There's this paper with this print setting, you can't even make it to be within Best Buy tolerances. So try another combination.
Yeah, well, now that you know the capability of the device, I mean, if we know the 95 percentile, then we know the gamut. And then if we know the gamut, can't we take that information and even push that up farther upstream so that before the job runs on a particular device, before it even gets measured, we know whether or not it can hit the Best Buy Blue. So don't put it on that device.
Exactly, exactly. And take it one step further. We have industry benchmark files that anyone can access. They're PDFs, and we give you the procedures on how to print these on your devices and then measure them with common measurement devices and then import into Chroma Checker. And then Chroma Checker can provide a complete detailed benchmark of how your device is performing. So it will tell you whether or not your device has the accuracy to match Grackle. It'll tell you whether or not it has the precision, meaning the repeatability for your customer requirements before you ever buy the device. In fact, we've benchmarked about 30 digital presses and about 30 large format presses to date, and we have them. We've documented how these presses performed. We've had situations where we had a printer that one of the manufacturers, we gave them the report information, and they got the report information and they looked at the data that Chroma Checker gave them and they said, hey, we know what's wrong. Can we take another stab at this? And we're like, of course. Right. So then they reran the benchmark files, remeasured them, and it did improve. And then they're like, okay, we know what's wrong now. Can we make it? So we helped the manufacturer essentially R&D their printer to make it as precise and accurate as the printer was capable of being.
And, you know, on the topic of benchmarking a press, especially at the point of install, a lot of the time as a print service provider will invest in new technology, a new press, and we're told that it is capable of doing X, Y, Z. However, after the installation, we find out that we're off that mark or off that expectation that the manufacturer has set for us. So what are you doing to benchmark presses at the print facilities? Is there, you know, a specific process that you follow to benchmark and determine whether or not it's within either the capability that the manufacturer agreed upon, or is it within the capability that you're setting your own expectations to?
So great question. Our benchmark, our complete benchmark, has five key categories that it looks at. Okay. It looks at first the gamut. So the range of color that the device is capable of producing, which is critical to understand whether or not this device on this substrate is capable of hitting Grackle within the desired E factor, and whether or not it's capable of hitting certain brand colors, like which percentage of the Pantone colors are capable of being reproduced with this device. Gamut is the first thing. The second thing is the repeatability of the device. So when I say, in fact, I should say precision. And in the precision, we're looking at the 1,000 sheet press run in terms of the consistency from the first sheet to the 1,000 sheet. Mm-hmm. We're looking, and that's what we call repeatability. We're looking at the reproducibility, which is how it prints Monday through Friday based on how many times you calibrate. Because the question comes up, I've heard you ask many other vendors, how often should I calibrate? And it all depends upon your E factor. If you have an E factor for a given device, you can then track how long it takes to fall outside that expectation factor, your E factor, and then you know how often you need to reapply process control, or in this case, calibration, to bring the device back to
You get your rhythm down as to based off your expectation. You just know that you can't stay within the lanes either or.
That's right. That's right. And the third part of precision is the within sheet variation. What is the within sheet variation of the page? All right. So those three categories all fall under the precision or how consistent the device is. Then we look at the accuracy. And the accuracy is how close the device can hit your given reference condition, whether that's Grackle, whether that's Grackle uncoated, whether that's printing out a BOP material with Flexo. Really doesn't matter. It's every print process has a reference condition that you're trying to hit, and we will assess how close this device is at hitting that reference condition. Next thing we look at is the actual resolution, or what we call the image contrast, so the addressability of what this device is capable of performing, because different devices will rate themselves at 600 dots per inch or 1200 dots per inch.
Yeah.
But you'll know that's not equal. Two devices that print 1200 dots per inch don't necessarily look the same. And this really comes into play with large format, where you're looking at the number of passes, because the number of passes will affect the time and the productivity, but obviously the quality. Our benchmark, you can look at all these attributes or only certain ones, depending upon what you really care about. But we document these within our software. I name which digital press had the largest gamut, which one had the smallest, which one had the most precision, which digital presses change color from the first sheet to the 50th sheet. Mm-hmm. There's digital presses out there, thousands of them, where you can have a 2E factor shift of color from the first sheet to the 50th sheet, and then it stables out. Which does that mean if you're going to profile the press and if you're going to do any work on it, that you really need to run 50 sheets, throw those away before you build the profile, since it doesn't level off till the 50th sheet? You think of that type of ramification. If you're trying to reproduce color to a customer's expectations of a 2, that's what it means. It means you really have to throw away the first 50 sheets on this digital press. Well, no one in their right mind is going to say, I want that press to do this work. That press is not capable of doing a 2 delta E or 2 E factor job.
Yeah.
Unless you're willing to throw away the first 50 sheets, which no one's going to be willing to do. Your profitability will be upside down. So how do you know that ahead of time? I'll guarantee you the manufacturers aren't going to tell you that.
That is a reality, Dave. And unfortunately, some of us have been in that situation where we find that the device doesn't perform to the expectations that were set when we purchased it. And doing the due diligence ahead of time and using solutions that can identify capability early on is critical to ensuring that our customers' expectations are met. Dave, great to have you on. Always wonderful to talk to you. And thanks again.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye. Yep. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Gamut Podcast. If you have ideas, suggestions, or would like to join us or even sponsor future podcasts, simply email me at jcollins@idealliance.org. That's JCOLLINS@idealliance.org. Take care and have a productive day.